Broadcasting live from Business Radio X Studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Learning Insights, featuring learning professionals improving performance to drive business results.
Welcome to another exciting and informative edition of Learning Insights. This is your host, Stone Payton, and in the studio with me this morning is my good buddy and co-host, Lee Cantor. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Stone. How are things in your world?
I am doing well. Had to get up a little early this morning. Sent Holly to London. She's going to go there for a week. She's going to pick up Katie from Oxford, see the sights, and maybe even visit some studio facilities on our behalf.
Very nice. Very nice. Deploying the spouses.
Always
a good plan.
You got to leverage all your resources. But I have really been looking forward to this segment because we have back in the studio with us today, and she's vowed to participate in the conversation a little bit. Our good friend Leanne Langford from Training Pros. Good morning, Sunshine.
Good morning, Stone.
But the star of the show I'm delighted to introduce today is from Bright Star Leadership Consulting. Please welcome to Learning Insights, Miss Beth Schumacher. How are you?
I'm doing great today. It's a beautiful day out. It's a little chilly, but life is good.
Well, we are delighted to have you. Bright Star Leadership Consulting. Tell us a little bit about your work. Who are you consulting with? What kind of problems are you out there trying to solve?
Well, we're out there trying to solve problems for leaders. And basically what we do is work with leaders to take their business performance to a higher level. It's very similar to the intro that you all have to this program. And we do that through coaching. We do that through leadership training and development. We also do that through consulting on strategy development, change management. So we just help leaders focus on what they need to do to improve their business results.
Now, do you think that leaders are born or made?
Yes.
Both?
Well, I think there has to be a little bit of DNA involved in wanting to be a leader. But the fact that there are skills involved in leadership is important, and it's why we are in business. Because if leaders were simply born, we would really be out of business.
So you can take somebody that maybe has some leadership traits and then kind of enhance them so they get the most out of it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And oftentimes, people don't understand what their own strengths are, and sometimes people need to work with coaches or work with trainers to really have a sense of what their strengths are. And oftentimes, people who formerly were not thinking of themselves as leaders can really step up to the plate when need be in a business setting.
So you see that a lot, that people are kind of not that self-aware about their own strengths and weaknesses?
Well, that's interesting. People vary with that. There are people who are self-aware. Typically, people who have a high degree of self-awareness do coaching and training really for a shorter period of time. But one of the things that we all have is blind spots. Mm-hmm. And part of what a coach does, part of what a trainer does, is to be a truth teller and to help all leaders see what their blind spots are, not only what their strengths are, but what their blind spots are.
I think that's probably my primary challenge. I just don't really fully understand what my strengths are and how to fully.
Really? You think that's the problem?
I'm sure that's my blind spot. So do you guys have a sweet spot, an industry or a level in the organization or a discipline or practice area that's really in your wheelhouse?
In terms of coaching, we typically focus on executive level and senior level leadership. In terms of training, leadership training and development goes all the way up and down the spectrum, from senior level to C-level executives throughout the organization to first-line manager leaders.
So now, if you're a first-line manager leader, is part of your job kind of coaching them up, but also to kind of identify like, hey, this person's on track to maybe make it all the way up to the big chair?
Yes, and typically we do not get called into any kind of a coaching engagement, talking about coaching specifically, unless that particular manager at that level is a high potential.
So do you ever get the request, look, all we need you to do, Beth, is just fix Bob?
Yes.
Bob's broken.
Yes. And fortunately, those are a low percentage of the requests that we get. But there are times when coaching is the last stop on the journey.
Oh, really?
It is the final stop. We need to do something. We've done, we've trained this person. We've given this person feedback. Let's pull in a coach and see if we can save this person. Because as you well know, people make a significant investment
sure.
in employees
yeah,
to train right. them. And they want to make sure that they're doing everything they can do to help an employee. So off sometimes, not very frequently, but sometimes the coach is the last stop and it may or may not work out.
Now, have you ever had an engagement where an executive contacts you and go, okay, I need you to work with my team. We're having some problems. And you work with the team, and then you realize, you know what? The guy that called me was the problem in this equation. How do you kind of deal with that?
Well, hopefully, we've done a good job in terms of due diligence on the front end to look at the situation holistically.
Uh-huh.
And we don't take it face value, my team needs to be fixed. Just like when we get a call for training, you know, my folks need to be trained.
Right.
We do a needs assessment. And based on that needs assessment, we look at the issue holistically. We look at the structure. It may be a coaching engagement is important. It may be the team is not working well. It may be the structure of the organization or the processes that the organization has in place, excuse me, are causing some of the issues. So we don't necessarily do a stimulus response.
Right.
We do some due diligence and some assessment up front.
Well, I would imagine that that's a little challenging from your standpoint because a person's hiring you to fix or to solve some challenge that they're having, and then you go in and you're not kind of knee-jerk just going to do whatever they say you're going to do that they'd like you to do. You're kind of holistically looking at this, and you might kind of bubble up some other issues. So you got to kind of readjust their expectations, right?
We do, and part of what's important is to involve and engage the person who engaged you from the get-go.
Right.
They're your design partner, whether you're looking at a coaching engagement, an assessment engagement, a training engagement, they're your partner from the get-go.
Mm-hmm.
And they also work with you to help you help define what is success going to look like.
Right.
So, and understand part of getting coaching or part of getting training is that you may find out some things when you look under the rug a little bit. There may be some things that you find out that aren't necessarily, excuse me, pretty or what you want, but you pay an external person to come in and to see what's happening.
But it's like you said, you're the kind of the truth teller, right?
We are the truth teller. That's correct.
And so I have to accept that if I'm going to start to engage with with you that you might be telling me a truth that maybe I'm not too thrilled about.
That's right. But hopefully I've established trust with you. I've established rapport
right, that
with
I
you.
Know that you're on my team and exactly. that you're watching my back. You're not just doing this to be disruptive.
Exactly. We're on the same side of the table, and
right.
we're working towards what your
business
goals
are. To the larger
goal.
And that's what you really, I would imagine, spend a lot of time kind of understanding what are we really, really trying to accomplish. And then, like you said, any of those elements might be tactics in the path to getting to what we're really trying to accomplish.
Absolutely. Very well stated. Thank you very much.
Nicely done.
I appreciate that. Nicely done. That's good.
You're going to use that in a brochure?
I'm writing it down as we okay. speak.
Now, you've invested a considerable portion of your career on the other side of the table. On the corporate side, speak to that a little bit of that history, but also the impact or value that helps you bring to what you're doing now with your work.
It's really important that I have credibility, whether I'm sitting in front of a C-level executive, whether I'm working with a frontline manager, whether I'm in a training class training people. I have to have credibility because one of the things that is really important and people judge you within about the first 10, 15 seconds when they meet you is, do you understand business? Do you have business a level of business acumen? So part of what I bring to the table is I spent quite a number of years at various companies in sales management, operations positions. So have that business experience and understand what it's like to be in the trenches and understand what it's like also to be a leader, to be a strategy leader. So I can bring that experience to understand what people are going through.
So how do you, when do you, what criteria do you apply when you're looking at making a decision to bring on an external consultant or contingent workers of any ilk for that matter? There must be some real science and methodology and discipline and rigor around that. She's frowning, so maybe not.
You just spin a wheel.
Flip a coin.
Can you ask that again?
Absolutely. So I'm wondering, how do you go through the decision process of, is it time to bring in an external consultant or contingent workers to help us accomplish what we're trying to accomplish?
So this is when I would call Leanne at Training Pros. Is that what you're saying?
I don't know.
Part of the work environment of today, as you well know, is that people are very squeezed in terms of resources. So if you have a need for a particular skill set and you don't have that particular skill set, or the people you have are otherwise deployed, then that's how you need to pull in. That's when you need to pull in a contingent worker. Now that's on the other side of the piece. Now, if I'm on the consulting side or the training side, and how do I work with clients? How do I help them decide when they need an external consultant? Typically, it's when things aren't going well and that there's a problem. And they understand.
There's some more of that truth again you keep talking about.
There's some more of that truth again. And they say, well, you know, Tiger Woods has a coach. We need some help. We're not meeting our business goals to the extent that we want to. We know that there are some resources available. Also, external resources in terms of coaching, not necessarily training, but in terms of coaching, external resources tend to have more credibility, whether it's true or not true. Most people don't want to spill the beans and be coached by people in their own organization.
Right, and this is kind of fresh eyes looking at the same situation.
It is, absolutely.
Now, what's it look like when you begin this? Because you mentioned trust as an important component to this. How do you trust a vendor? Like, are most of your relationships happen kind of organically over time where they know of your firm, they get to know you, they have some relationship with you, and then they feel comfortable bringing you on? Because I can't believe they would just go to the internet and search leadership coach and then just take the top ranking.
Well, leadership coach and Beth Schumacher comes
go
up
right
as the top.
So maybe you do just pick that and then just go.
No, you're exactly right. It is a referral business. Mm-hmm. It is a referral business. And most people that I work with and that people in our firm work with are there because someone had a good experience and they tell someone else.
But is this something that you're bragging about? It's like, you know, when I go to a restaurant and I have a good restaurant experience, I tell a million people. But like if I was going to a psychiatrist, I don't know. They're like, I am going to the best psychiatrist. You know, like is this something where there's, I don't want to say a stigma attached to it, but is it show some weakness on my part?
No, it's very cool, actually.
It's a cool, it's a hip thing?
It is actually a perk.
Right.
That executives get.
So they brag about.
They kind of brag about it. It's almost like having, like people brag about having their own personal trainer.
Right.
People brag about having their own coach. In fact, I was at lunch yesterday with a man who was very proud of the fact that he had a coach for 6 or 7 months. He loved his coach. We talked about what the positive impact was. Mm-hmm. He was proud of that, and there were 5 or 6 people at the table. So it is a little bit of a bragging.
So it's a status symbol.
It's a little bit of a quasi-status symbol.
Yeah, you got me. I want a trophy consultant. Wouldn't that be cool? And I take them to the big meetings and stuff. I think that would be a lot of fun. So one of the areas you talked about was training.
Yes.
And I'd actually like, Leanne, I'd like you to contribute to this portion of the conversation as well. So I'd like to hear your perspective as well. But I'll ask Beth first. How have you seen the role of the trainer evolve?
I really have to start with a very brief talking about the learning environment. And, of course, you all know with this show how much the learning environment has changed. The workforce certainly has changed. It's not uncommon to have 4 generations in the workforce. How people get knowledge has changed. People get knowledge anywhere, anytime, when they need it. In fact, I got a new laptop the other day, and I have Windows 8, and I'm new to Windows 8, and I see all these tiles up. I don't want to see the tiles. I couldn't find the start button. So what do you think I did?
Called someone?
I went to YouTube.
YouTube.
I Googled.
How to use Windows.
And I went to YouTube, and I said, how to get rid of the tiles and find the start button. So I'm saying that because, or I'm sitting watching a movie. I was watching 2001, and I was thinking, is Stanley Kubrick alive or is he dead? Well, I had my phone. I Googled it, and he's dead, by the way. I'm so sorry to say. But learners get knowledge anywhere and everywhere the learner is in control. Technology has changed so much. Everybody has multiple devices in terms of how. So when you're in the workplace, you know, it's not just knowledge does not just reside with the corporation, with the trainer, with your manager.
So you think an organization's responsibility is to kind of have this knowledge available in a variety of formats because everybody learns differently?
People will find the knowledge, whether it is texting their friend across the way, whether it's Googling something, whether it's going to a SharePoint site, although SharePoint sites are known as the loneliest room in the corporation, or a wiki or a blog.
Right.
People will find out what they need to know, that just-in-time learning. Plus, you know, Sharon Begley, who's a science writer for Newsweek, you all may know about, talks about this notion of people having digital ADD. So in terms of the workforce itself and their ability to, they learn in bits and bytes now. So as this learning environment has changed, the trainer has to change. It used to be that as a trainer, you needed to have some subject matter expertise. You needed to have good platform skills because you were in the classroom. That was the main modality. And that was pretty much it. I mean, you kind of went into the classroom and you trained, and then you went back and talked with your trainers. The reality now is you have learners in front of you who know a lot. How do you help them collaborate? How do you use the tools? How can you be a true facilitator of learning to help and use the technology in the classroom, use webinars, maybe make a podcast, maybe make a video, maybe use your swivel device with your iPhone to record bits and pieces of the class to send out for sustainability? So as a trainer, you have to have a much greater level of knowledge and have to look at training holistically, not just in a separate kind of piece, but you have to figure out how to train.
Right. Well, this shift seems dramatic in terms of how it was done maybe 5 or 10 years ago. It seems like the trainer has virtually unlimited choices of how to get the knowledge out there.
Yes.
But organizationally, you don't have unlimited resources typically, so you have to kind of prioritize what's the best way for my organization to disseminate the information.
That's correct. And oftentimes the function of the trainer has to be as a consultant to the business partner that they work with and with the learning organization. Because what typically people want, what business people want, is how can we get the most learning out, get the most knowledge and skills the most efficiently and with the least cost.
And also so that they actually absorb it, not just because, look, we put it out in 50 different places, but nobody's looking at it. That doesn't serve anybody's need.
Exactly. So part of what a good trainer does, and certainly a good training manager does, is to work with the business partner and say, here are some ways that we can accomplish this.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't necessarily need to be classroom learning. In fact, classroom learning is probably one of the more expensive ways to do it.
Right.
You know, however, there are times when a webinar is not the right modality. There are times when it's okay when you're doing behavioral skills and when you're really needing to work, that classroom training is good. But it may be that you have a telepresence room and you can do classroom training. I can be here in wherever I am, Georgia. You can be in California, but I can see you and I can work with you. So there may be a way to do that. So trainers have to understand what resources they have available to work with, and actually, technology is typically a lot cheaper.
Leanne, you work with these issues, these challenges every day. Speak to it a little bit, and maybe include, if you will, what can I do if I want to be a trainer and I want to contribute in this arena? How do I get myself prepared to be effective in this environment? Because it sounds to me like there's an awful lot of stuff going on that I got to respond to.
Well, there's a lot of stuff going on, and I'm not really sure about the best way to go from being out of the learning and development industry into becoming a trainer. Most people get there by they're just drawn to it in the workplace, and they start finding opportunities to train, and then they go, I think I'd like to get better at this, and then they start going to classes on, train, how to be a better trainer, that type of thing. But it does take a lot of time to go up to the level that Beth is talking about, because there's a big difference between understanding content and standing up and talking about it to making a real strong experience where people walk away understanding stuff in the least amount of time for the least amount of money. Mm-hmm. Some of the stuff she was talking about was making my brain go off, because I remember I was a trainer a really long time ago, back before gray hair and wrinkles showed up. And then it was, you know, ugly handouts, no PowerPoint. It was just the old-fashioned stuff. And just recently I did some training, and they had a back channel set up with a hashtag. And I'm sitting there going, what on earth has happened to the, because there's, I'm like, there's people talking about me and I don't know it. And then I look and people have these, like you guys, Kindle Fires, iPads, and they're looking at my presentation ahead of me because they've sent it out and everybody's got it on their iPad.
Exactly. I'm working with a major corporation right now. Mm-hmm. There's no such thing as a student guide anymore. There's nothing printed. It's all online. They bring their iPad in or their computer in. And all that information is online.
It's amazing.
Well, it seems like from a trainer standpoint, it's a little, you got to kind of acclimate yourself, because like you were saying, Leanne, that at one point you were the star and you're in the top of the room and everybody's listening to you. Now you're talking, they're Googling you to see how smart you really are. You know, they're typing stuff kind of internally amongst themselves, and you got to try to tune that out, but, and you still got to give, you know, say what you got to say. And it's kind of a living, breathing environment now, whereas before it was kind of a monologue.
That's a really good observation, because it used to be that the trainer was kind of the real sage on the stage.
Right.
You know, the knowledge resided with the trainer. And if trainers can't make that shift.
Right. That's a big shift,
though. It is a big shift to make, that you have to be the guide on the side now.
Right.
That's your role, is to be the guide on the side. How can you literally facilitate?
It's more
learning
of a facilitation rather than a
Absolutely.
Guru on the top of the mountain.
Absolutely, because the knowledge often resides in the learners. It's
right.
not that you don't bring anything to bear on that knowledge, but learners, people are so smart. People know how to get knowledge when they need it. So your role is not that, you know, font of knowledge, but that font of how do I connect people, facilitate people, take advantage of the way they already learn.
Right.
Make sure I'm facilitating that collaborative learning, because they're going to learn a lot more from their coworkers than they are from me. It's a little bit of an ego bust, to
you
be
would,
honest with you.
But you have to have an ego that's confident enough to accept that, though. It's a little different kind of an ego. Like, one ego is I'm the smartest guy in the room and everybody's learning from me. That's one thing. But now it's like, I'm still might be the smartest guy in the room, but I'm going to get all the knowledge from everybody, and then collectively we're going to be way smarter than I can ever be.
Exactly, and isn't that exciting?
Right, and that has to be enough for me as the facilitator, I would think.
Exactly, and it takes a lot of pressure in some ways.
Right.
I mean, there's a different skill set involved in that. But I like the idea of not having to know everything.
Right.
And I like the idea of being able to facilitate. Oh, my gosh, you know, they can communicate and collaborate, and they can get this information, and they can pull in the worker heroes, and we can see a little video clip
right.
of that worker.
Or, and then something you never even thought of, somebody will say, and that'll bubble up a whole tangential thing that might be really the best part of the day. You
exactly.
know? It's the managing the chaos is a different skill than coming in with some structure, this is how we do things, and this is the answer to the question.
It is, and some trainers make that transition better than others.
Right.
So this relationship, Leanne, between you and Beth, this goes back some. How did this all get started? When did you guys start visiting and working together?
Well, Beth used to be a leader at one of my clients, Cox Communications. You've had somebody on from there before.
Yeah.
And I would supply Beth with talent as needed here and there, but we just clicked right away as soon as we talked on the phone. I really enjoyed speaking with her. And so, you know, I just served her for a while, and then as she left Cox and went into her own consultancy, we still connected and got back together, and I wanted to bring her on the radio show and talk about what she's up to.
So what compelled you to leave the corporate arena and go into private practice? Is that the right term?
Well, I guess it is. This is a long story, but I'll make it. I'll give you the nano version. I loved what I was doing at Cox. I was doing a lot of strategy development for sales and sales leadership training across the corporation. I missed being with the peeps, though. I missed being in that environment where I was either working with people individually, working with teams, working as a facilitator to facilitate that learning. So I missed that contact in the trenches. So that's why I left.
So now what has the transition been? It seems like in your career you've worked with these big kind of mega companies, and now you're kind of in an eat what you kill world now. It's a little different, I'm sure.
It is. I had been in business for myself prior to my foray with Cox, so I know the lay of the land a little bit. It's very exciting to me, though, because I can take the knowledge that I got at Cox, I can take the knowledge that I got from being on my own, and just continue to build on that. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty exciting.
Do you find your clients asking you, or do you find yourself trying to get a handle on helping them tie the training, the consulting, the change management effort, whatever it is, to bottom line business results?
It has to happen. And one of the transitions that trainers have to make is trainers have to be a part of the business. For example, one of the things that we did when I was at Cox Communications is we actually put the trainers in the field. As opposed to trainers reporting into HR, they did a dotted line to HR and they reported actually into the business. So we had the trainers on site in the field, made sure and continue to consult businesses to make this happen, to make sure that the trainers, the training managers, are day-to-day being in the business meetings consulting with the business leaders and with the people who are doing the work. Because if we don't make training relevant to driving business results, then it's a waste of time for everybody. And one of the things that training consistently has a tough time doing is making that connection between training and ROI. That's a tough connection to make. But if trainers get embedded in the business, it's almost like when you hear reporters are embedded
right.
with the troops. It's the same.
It's a different perspective.
It's a different
when you're in the Humvee than it is when you're, in another country looking at a video of people in a Humvee.
Absolutely. And when you're in that Humvee, and when you're talking to soldiers away from that Humvee, you have a lot more credibility because
right.
you understand what they go through. You have right. a level of business acumen, and it really informs how do I skill these people for the reality that they live in, and how can I, again, use their subject matter expertise to help the rest of the people in the group learn skills, go out and apply this skill in the workplace. So the training is really driven by what the business needs and how to help improve business results.
That's the pearl for the whole conversation for me this morning, and I've found all of it very engaging and inspiring, but this idea of embedding, I really like that. Don't be surprised if you hear that reflected on other shows, but I'll try to credit you.
Please credit me and a little, check.
Well, no, I'll tell them. My trophy consultant, Beth Schumacher, says. That's what I'll do. So what's next in the coming months? Where are you going to put most of your energy, you think?
Most of my energy is going to go into coaching and training. In fact, I'm working with an organization right now where we're doing a series of leadership development interventions. The wonderful thing about it is that it's cascading from the leadership down, so it's a wonderful training intervention. The other thing that I'm going to be working on is working with a cohort group of trainers. Basically, in some ways, it is like a mastermind group, helping trainers to learn, figure out what can I do to really continue to enhance my skills. Do I need to go on one of these MOOCs, these massive
Sure.
online open courses, iTunes University? What are the resources available for me to learn about the technology, to learn about business, to learn about learning? So that cohort group, I think, is going to be very, very interesting because typically, trainers can learn together faster than their corporation can train them. So we want to make that happen for them so they continue to understand how they can enhance their knowledge.
Right, and it's changing so rapidly, you really got to stay on top of it.
Absolutely. You can't wait for your corporation right. to train you on
yeah,
these new
it.
Things.
It's already, they don't even use that anymore.
They don't use that anymore, exactly. So I'm excited. I'm very excited about that.
Well, I'm excited for you, and what an absolute delight to have you come in the studio and visit with us this morning. I hope you'll come back and maybe bring a client or maybe someone from your cohort. I think that could be fun to talk about your experience.
I would be delighted.
Yeah, you'd be up for that?
I would absolutely be delighted.
Fantastic. Well, let's make sure before we wrap that our listeners know how to get in touch with you and have a substantive conversation about the kinds of things that BrightStar can bring to them.
BrightStarLeadershipConsulting.com. We have a great website. Google that, contact me, and we'd be delighted to talk with you about your business and training needs.
Outstanding. Well, until next time, this is Stone Payton for Lee Cantor. Our guests this morning, Leanne Cantor and Beth Schumacher.
Leanne Langford.
You're right. It's Leanne Langford.
But they just did get married.
We did. We're trying to keep it on the down low.
Lee and Leanne. Yeah.
Lee and Leanne.
It's confusing.
Take two. Until next time, this is Stone Payton for Lee Cantor. Our guest this morning, Leanne Langford, Beth Schumacher, and everyone here at the Business Radio X family saying we'll see you next week on Learning Insights.